If you run a business, Bank of Clark County has you covered. Offering cash management services to automate and simplify your business banking, streamlined digital banking, and merchant payment processing that's a one-stop solution. Plus, Bank of Clark offers corporate credit cards that help you optimize capital, organize expenses, and enhance your business. Whether you're looking to earn points faster or lower your APR, Bank of Clark County has the card that's right for you. Member FDIC.
Maybe it's that time of year again. Time to roll out and then get it in. 'Cause the sun is outside beaming, it's beaming. And every day feels like the weekend, the weekend.
You know who it is. This is the Mic Drop Podcast, and I'm your host, Delvin Cox. This week, we're going to do things a little different as I'm on a solo tip today. So we're going to touch on some of the top news stories of this past week. First and foremost, let's start off with saying Happy Martin Luther King Day. With that being said, it saddens me to see all the violence that occurred over this holiday weekend. In Miami, 5 minors and 3 adults were shot at Dr. Martin Luther King Day Memorial Park. In Chicago, at least 39 people have been shot over the holiday weekend, leaving 10 dead. This is not the legacy that Dr. King had died for. Let me go over some of the reasons why Dr. King was so important to our society. Reading from the KingCenter.org, I'm going to cite some of the accomplishments of the great Dr. King. During less than the 13 years of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s leadership of the modern American civil rights movement, from December 1955 to April 4th, 1968, African Americans achieved more genuine progress towards racial equality in America than the previous 350 years had produced. Dr. King is widely regarded as America's eminent advocate of nonviolence and one of the world's greatest nonviolent leaders in world history. Let's talk about that for a minute. It's almost ironic that you see such acts of violence on one of America's most nonviolent leaders in history. Let's continue on. Drawing inspirations from both his Christian faith and the peaceful teachings of Mahatma Gandhi, Dr. King led a nonviolent movement in the late 1950s and 60s to achieve legal equality for African Americans in the United States. While others were advocating for freedom by any means necessary, including violence, they're talking about Malcolm X right there, Martin Luther King Jr. used his power of words and acts of nonviolent resistance, such as protests, grassroots organizing, and civil disobedience to achieve seemingly impossible goals. He went on to lead similar campaigns against poverty and international conflict, always maintaining fidelity to his principles that men and women everywhere, regardless of color or creed, are equal members of the human family. Let's just stop right there and go over what that means. What he's basically saying right there is that he fought for us, not only blacks, not only whites, but everybody, to be on equal footing. I think that sometimes gets lost on people. This man just didn't fight for black people. This is just not a black holiday. This is a holiday for everybody to celebrate. Because without the accomplishments of him and other blacks, we wouldn't be where we're at today in such a progressive society. Let me just give you some more facts about Dr. King. Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, Nobel Peace Prize literature, and letter from Birmingham Jail are among the most revered orientations and writings in American literature. His accomplishments are now taught to American children of all races, and his teachings are studied by scholars and students worldwide. He is the only non-president to have a national holiday dedicated in his honor. In 1955, he was recruited to serve as the spokesperson for the Montgomery bus boycott, which was a campaign by the African-American population of Montgomery, Alabama, to force integration of the city bus lines. after 381 days of nearly universal participation by citizens of the black community, many of whom had walked miles to work each day as a result. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that racial segregation in transportation was unconstitutional. In 1963, he led a coalition of numerous civil rights groups in a nonviolent campaign aimed at Birmingham, Alabama, which at the time was described as the most segregated city in America. The subsequent brutality of police, illustrated most vividly by television images of young blacks being assaulted by dogs and water hoses, led to a national outrage, resulting in a push for unprecedented civil rights legislation. It was during this time that Dr. King drafted his letter from a Birmingham jail, the manifesto of Dr. King's philosophy and tactics, which is today required reading for universities worldwide. In 1964, at 35 years old, Martin Luther King Jr. became the youngest person to win the Nobel Peace Prize. His acceptance speech in Oslo is thought by many to be among the most powerful remarks ever delivered at an event, climaxing at one point with the oft-quoted phrase, "I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality. This is why right temporarily defeated is stronger than evil triumphant." The next year, 1965, Congress went on to pass the Voting Rights Act, which was an equally important set of laws that eliminated remaining barriers to African Americans who in some localities have almost been completely disfranchised. This legislation resulted directly from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, March for Voting Rights led by Dr. King. So that basically says that he plays a big part in why African Americans could vote today. And it's funny to say that with so many of us who don't take advantage of the opportunity to vote. That goes with saying with what went on with our past election, where we had one of the lowest voter turnouts since Obama first started running for office. And that is not necessarily a good thing. I think voting is very important, and for those who have the opportunity to vote, they should vote, because if you're not voting, you're not changing. You're not making change in your society. You're not making a difference. You basically can't complain. So with all those who are complaining about Donald Trump and who's our president, if you didn't vote, you really can't say anything, because you didn't make an effort to make a difference. I'm not saying that voting is the only way you can make a difference, but it is one of the main ways to show that you're involved in your community and are trying to make a difference. Let me continue with this one last final thing I want to read. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s less than 13 years of nonviolent leadership ended abruptly and tragically on April 4, 1968, when he was assassinated at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. Dr. King's body was returned to his hometown in Atlanta, Georgia, where his funeral ceremony was attended by high-level leaders of all races and political stripes. Well, let me talk about what this means to me. About a year and a half ago, I had the opportunity to go to Georgia and visit the church that Dr. King spoke at. And I guess it's like a little exhibit that they have there, like dedicated Dr. King, and it, to be honest with you, it was breathtaking. To go there and see where they marched at, to see this big church that he preached at, and to see everything, because it basically has all the accomplishments that he did there. It's inspiring to see how one man made so much change, not only to America, but to our world. Dr. King is not only a political figure just for this country, it's for all countries, it's somebody you can look up to. It's probably, in my opinion, Dr. King is probably one of the most fascinating and important figures in our history. in the closing out, I think that when you look at his legacy, you should have more respect for it than people show. You shouldn't be shooting on his holiday. You shouldn't be, it should be a peace. It should be a time of peace. Dr. King was a nonviolent man. He would not want this. And I think this goes out to all the young brothers out there who are doing these things, doing these violent acts. Stop. There's better ways to get your point across. We don't have to always raise a gun up towards a person. We don't always have to commit violence acts. We're better than that. You're better than that. And you should shoot for higher things. Instead of shooting with a gun, shoot with your mind. Well, that's pretty much all I gotta say on that. So let's move on to some more other topics today I want to discuss. We are now 1 week away from the inauguration of President Donald Trump. Well, president-elect at this time, but next week he will be our president, whether people like it or not. And it's interesting how things are turning out. A couple days ago, he met with Martin Luther King III to discuss some things. And I think it's a good meeting. There's a lot of black leaders, black celebrities meeting up with him to discuss things with him, just to kind of clear the air with him. Like Steve Harvey met with him earlier this week. Like I said, Martin Luther King III met with him. And overall, I think it's a good thing. I think we should have these talks with him. You should want to talk to our future president, just not only to straighten some things out, but maybe open his eyes to things. I think people kind of, because of the remarks he said and the things he's done thus far, people kind of want to make the comments of like, why would you want to go talk to him? But conversations is always a good thing. You know, just to hear his side of things. And I'm quite sure. And everybody who's came out of the conversation with him said they had a good experience. So hopefully he's taking in what he's learning from like people like Steve Harvey and Martin Luther King III. And he's taking it to heart. And he'll become better for that. I think I've said this before on this podcast, and I'm going to say it again. Yeah, Trump, not necessarily my pick, who I want to be president. But I think he does deserve the right to give him a chance. I think you should not judge him for the things that he's done in the past. Because that was just that. That was the past. What we have to do is, we have to hold him accountable for the present and hold him accountable for things that he does when he's president. Now, when he becomes president, that's a whole different thing. That's when you hold him accountable for everything that he does and you can scrutinize him for that. But you have to give him that chance. People are kind of saying things like they want him to see him impeached. They don't want him to get in the office. But I have this to say to that. Him not getting in the office and not getting the chance to make the mistakes or do the right that he's going to do is probably one of the worst cardinal sins that we can do as a country. Because you, like it or not, he won the election. And if you take that away from him, that is a slap in the face to what our country is. All in all, this is basically saying, give Trump a chance to see what he does first. And then when he does right or when he does wrong, be able to sit there and say, well, he did a good thing or he did a bad thing. And there's plenty of things that I'm questioning about Trump. One of the things I will talk about in a minute, and that's the Affordable Care Act. They're already making steps to get rid of that, and it worries me in a great way, because millions of Americans out there are worried that they're not going to have health care. And I think that when you're going to make a decision like that, when you're taking steps to get rid of something that big, first of all, it's expensive to get rid of that. Second of all, if you're going to get rid of the Affordable Health Care Act, or aka Obamacare, you better damn well have something in place for all these Americans that need health care. It kind of hurt me to see all these stories that's come out about all these Americans who have health care and they basically depend on the Affordable Care Act to basically live. So I'll be very interested to see what, in fact, will replace the Affordable Care Act if it's not just the Affordable Care Act with another name on it. An article I read today says that 18 million people could lose insurance for the first year after partial Obamacare repeal. Let me go over a little bit with you so I can get an understanding of what it's talking about. A partial repeal of Obamacare could leave 18 million people who have insurance today with no coverage 1 year later, according to an analysis by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. The report estimates that 32 million people will lose their insurance over 10 years. The CBO based its estimates on a bill passed by Republicans and vetoed by President Obama in 2015. That bill mounted to a partial repeal of the Affordable Care Act, which is also called Obamacare, eliminating the penalty for people who didn't have health insurance. It also cut out the government subsidies that currently help people pay for their premiums. The CBO estimate that getting rid of the penalty for people who do not purchase insurance will lead to 18 million fewer insurance people within a year, and that number would eventually grow to 32 million after subsidies and a Medicaid expansion was also eliminated. As NPR Allison Kojak reported, the congressional Republicans haven't introduced legislation to repeal Obamacare as of yet this year, but they have suggested they'll follow the model of the previous 2015 bill. So far, lawmakers are pushing to repeal have no plan for encouraging people to have insurance without the mandated subsidies. We're not holding hard deadlines, only because we want to get it right, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Republican Wisconsin, said. On Monday, President-elect Donald Trump told the Washington Post that he was working on a plan to replace the Affordable Care Act with a proposal that would provide insurance for everybody. As we reported as NPR.org, by the way, we did not get any specific details about this health care plan during a telephone interview with the newspaper. But he did say it would be much less expensive and it would involve much lower deductibles. Okay, well, going over that, the problem with this is the fact that nothing is being put out there. The American people aren't being told anything about what's going to replace it, how it's going to replace it, how are we going to get these lower deductibles and these lower premiums. And I'm quite sure to a lot of Americans that's frightening because they don't know what's going to happen to their health care. I think what needs to be said, it needs to be clarified exactly what's going to happen. I think people need to know what's going to happen and what are they going to do about it, and it needs to be something needs to be said ASAP. As of this, the recording of this, Trump is not president yet, but they're already making the steps to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. I'm hoping, and what I'm guessing is, with him coming in office, we will get a clearer picture of what his plans for our healthcare system is. That's from what it looks like. That will be one of the first things on his agenda. So I'm looking very forward to hearing not only what he has to say, but what's going to be done to appease the American people. Because, yeah, you can say Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act had its issues, but overall, it got more Americans to have healthcare. And whether you realize it or not, Americans, people in general, need healthcare. Healthcare is one of those things that you don't realize you need it until something goes wrong with you. A good example of that is the situation with my wife. My wife, as I've talked about before on this podcast, has diabetes. And diabetes medicine, as some of you may know, some of you may not know, is very expensive. And while our health care is almost not affordable, but due to the fact that we have health care, my wife can go to the doctor and get herself checked out, and she can work on getting herself better. Now, if she didn't have health care, it would be a whole different story. It'd be a lot harder to find medicine for her, and it'd be a lot harder to... how can I say this right? For her, basically for her to get through her days, because, you know, with diabetes, some days she feels great, and some days she don't feel great. Some days she needs her insulin shot. Fortunately for me, my wife is doing a very good job of exercising and eating right to help with her diabetes, so she doesn't have it as bad as she was having it before. But it's still something that she has, and that's still something that she's working on. And believe it, bottom line is she's going to need health care. And I'm quite sure a lot of Americans are going through this very same problem. And I think that's why the Affordable Care Act is important to us. Stepping to a more lighter topic, I want to talk about the Soulja Boy and Chris Brown beef, or so-called beef. This beef so-called happened because Soulja Boy said Chris Brown called him, confronting him about Karrueche Tran, blase, whatever bullshit you want to call it. Let me just say that this is beyond stupid. Because it's so many levels to this where I think that, first and foremost, they're going to have, if you don't know, they got into an argument on Twitter beef or whatever you want to call it, and it resulted to 50 Cent and Floyd Mayweather saying, you know what, we're going to do a boxing event where we're going to have you two guys box out in the ring where I'm making a big card and making a big spectacle, Chris Brown versus Soulja Boy, Floyd Mayweather's going to train Soulja Boy, and Mike Tyson's going to train Chris Brown, and it's become a whole shit show of a thing. My whole problem with this is this. You have people, you're doing a boxing event for the first thing, and you have people who are involved in this boxing event who have issues with domestic violence. Whether they did it or not is not the issue. But the fact of the matter is, three out of five of these people have issues with domestic violence or have had issues with domestic violence. Do you really want to be promoting a boxing event of any sort with people like that? Not saying that they committed the act or not. That's not the point. But it's not a good look. Second off, it's kind of buffoonery in the best way, because these people are sitting there hollering out. Chris Brown, the Soulja Boy, holler out their Bloods, and they from Pirate, they Fruit Street Bloods and stuff like that, and the Bloods are coming out saying, you guys are not Bloods, and people know they're not Bloods, and it's just all in all utterly ridiculous. And I just think that it's one of those things when you look at it and you say, every time you want to see black people get taken seriously, shit like this happens. We got to stop the buffoonery. We got to stop the Love and Hip Hop type bullshit. Now, there's nothing wrong with the TV show Love and Hip Hop. That's your type of thing you like to watch. But we should not be reenacting Love and Hip Hop in our daily lives. Sometimes we got to get this buffoonery out of the way. In the terms of, they're both grown men. Grown men business should be handled in a grown man manner. You shouldn't be arguing on Twitter. Twitter beef is lame. I've said this before and I'm going to say it again. Beefing with somebody on Twitter when you know they're thousands and thousands of miles away is lame as fuck. It doesn't accomplish anything. How about instead of these brothers arguing on Twitter about some chick that neither one of them talk to anymore, how about them using their power to accomplish more? How about, hey, let's raise some money together up for some schools. Let's build some schools. Let's build up our communities. We keep talking about we're Bloods and Crips and stuff like that. Let's bring up these communities that we keep talking about we are. Let's build some community centers for the young kids in these neighborhoods, because these guys both have a lot of money, and the shit they represent is come from poverty. People who are Bloods ain't Bloods because they have money. They're Bloods because they are poor. And this is the way of they can think of, you know, building themselves up, building their community up. You know, and it's literally foolishness. It's buffoonery, to say the least. Matter of fact, this shit is so fucking ridiculous. I don't even want to talk about this shit no more. Fuck it. I don't want to see the fight. I will not pay to see the fight. I implore people not to pay to see the fight. Do something else better with your time and your money. Fuck it. I don't want to talk about this issue no more. Moving on. The final topic we're going to discuss today, because, well, full disclosure, we recorded an episode of the podcast a couple days ago. The reason why I didn't post, because when we were finishing the episode of the podcast, the computer crashed and we lost the whole episode. And when we tried to link up today to redo the episode, we basically couldn't link up, so I figured I didn't want to go a week without doing an episode. We're already as late as fuck as it is. So I figured I'll just put out something right now to give you guys something to listen to. And then later on, when me and Vision links up, then we'll do a podcast and everything will be back to normal. But right now, we're going to give you a little something just to whet your appetite and bring in the new year, as this is kind of our first episode of the new year. So just wanted to give you guys something to say thank you for being patient with us this week. And I think my plans for the podcast, we're going to be doing much more episodes of podcasts. We're going to have more guests on the show. We're going to try to do bigger, better things for the podcast. And I think you guys will like what we're going to be doing. Well, moving on, our final topic for the day is the fact that the U.S. is ending its wet foot, dry foot policy for Cubans. This affects me because I live in Florida. And as you know, while I live out in Florida, I live in Miami, which is mostly Cuban dominated. And a great reason why it's dominated by the Cuban community is because of the wet foot, dry foot policy. For those who don't know, let me give you some information on what the wet foot, dry foot policy is. The wet foot, dry foot policy is the given name to a consequence of the 1995 revision of the Cuban Adjustment Act of 1966 that essentially says anyone who fled Cuba and entered the United States will be allowed to pursue residency a year later. After talks with the Cuban government, the Clinton administration came to an agreement with Cuba that it would stop admitting people intercepted in U.S. waters. Since then, it has become known as the wet foot, dry foot policy. A Cuban sought on the waters between the two nations with wet foot would similarly be sent home or to a third country. One who would make it to shore, aka dry feet, gets a chance to remain in the United States and a year later would qualify for expedited legal permanent residence status and eventually United States citizenship. In January 2017, the Obama administration announced the immediate into the policy. Now, there are two sides to this. There are a lot of Cuban Americans who are pissed off that the policy is ending because their family members will not be able to come over and try to get their chance of freedom. They will have to come over the legal way. But there are some Cuban Americans who are happy that the policy ended because, one, it's very dangerous to try to come over here on a boat. It's not even really a boat. It's literally like logs stuck together. A raft, or what you want, a makeshift raft, trying to make your way to the United States. And many people die on their way here. And it's very sad, it's very tragic that these people trying to leave this country go through so much to try to get here. And a lot of times they don't make it. So I think the idea of ending this policy is the fact so they won't even try to come because they know they'll be sent back. So that I think that in the long run, that'll stop a lot of Cuban deaths that would be unnecessary. But, and plus it goes with the fact that since Obama's leaving, he's been trying to mend these broken fences and these problems that we've had with Cuba, which is in the long run, it's a smart thing because Cuba's so close to Miami. And it could probably be, if we didn't have some sort of camaraderie with that country, it could turn out bad for us. Cuba is the closest country to us, with the exception of Canada, that can actually probably do damage to us. And that's somebody you kind of want to have on your side when they're so close to us. And that was one of the reasons why we, in fact, had the Cuban Missile Crisis. Because the United States thought that Russia may be, this is to my synopsis of what I gathered from it, from what I remember so far from school, that the United States thought that Russia would try to launch missiles from Cuba to the United States to attack us. And it was basically what started and instigated the Cold War. Now, getting back to what I was talking about with the wet foot, dry foot rule, let me read about you a little bit about that. President Barack Obama is ending the long-standing wet foot, dry foot policy that allows Cubans who arrive in the United States without a visa to become permanent residents. This move, which wasn't previously outlined, is likely one of the final foreign policy decisions of Obama's term. It terminates a decades-long policy that many argue amounted to preferential treatment of a single group of immigrants, or migrants. What they meant by that was the fact that while Cubans are one group of migrants that travel on boats to get here from their country, another group that doesn't also was Haitian Americans. And Haitian Americans would do the same thing, but they would be sent back. So a lot of people were saying, well, how is that fair to allow the Cubans into the country but not allow the Haitians into the country, when they both are kind of trying to do the same thing, make better lives for themselves? But the wet foot, dry foot rule was kind of allowed, in a way, inadvertently allowing discrimination, because the Haitians were being sent back and the Cubans were allowed to stay, and other races were being sent back as well. So this kind of led to a cultural divide, and since where people would not sympathize with Cubans because of this, because they were like, well, you guys get to stay here if y'all make it here. And there's plenty of our Haitian brothers, or our Jamaican brothers, and people from other impoverished areas would not be allowed to stay in the country. I think there's a lot of people who are sitting there happy that this policy has ended, but they're happy because of the wrong reasons. They're happy because, well, while it's getting equal footing for any culture that comes over, and basically it's saying that anybody who comes over here illegally will be sent back. I do think that Cubans, the best way I can describe it is, I feel like it's negative and it's positive, because the positive thing about it is Cubans have done so much for the culture in Miami. You can just take a look at Little Havana, Cayocho, 8th Street, and just see so much culture. And you can just see some of the top people in this city and see why the city is so great. A large part of that is because of the Cuban community. They've done so much to, while they're not necessarily from the United States, they've done so much to make the United States their home. And if you take a look at Miami, you can see a great part of that is from the Cuban community. That being said, I kind of wonder what would happen if Haitian Americans were allowed to come over here the same way the Cuban Americans were. Would our society be more diverse because we have Haitians here? Would you see as much Haitian success as you see with the Cuban success? Because a lot of very successful Cuban Americans in this country, because they come over here and they work hard and they make a name for themselves. So my question is, would it have been the same if the wet foot, dry foot policy applies to Haitian Americans as well. Who knows, really? Because it didn't. And now that it's ending, it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It has its positives and its negatives. It's going to be very interesting to see whether, A, how it affects our economy in Miami, in Florida, for that matter, or South Florida, be specific, and B, whether Trump or anybody else just decides to bring this policy back a year later. Well, that's all I really got to say today, man. Thank you guys for listening to the podcast today. It's going to be a little short today because, like I said, it's only me by myself. So we're only at like maybe 40 minutes tops. Thank you guys for listening in. This is our first podcast for 2017. And hopefully we'll have many more to come for this year. Next episode, I'm quite sure we'll probably have I Am Vision on to talk about some more things. We're probably going to talk about the Affordable Care Act together. It's a lot more things we're going to talk about. He's dealing with a lot of things. I think him being on the podcast will be very therapeutic for him. So I'll make sure next episode we'll have him on. Also, shouts out to Games We Don't Play Pod. Shouts out to my boy Chowfee, man. He was on the podcast a couple episodes ago. If you get a chance, check out that episode. Definitely, it was a great episode. We'll probably get Sean on the podcast really soon, you know, but probably going to reach out to him eventually. Want to have a lot more guests on the show, man. I want to have guys like the Fortress and Nerditude on the podcast. I want to have some of the Married to the Game guys on the podcast. Ed Placentia, Tim Router, Gabe. I want to have those type of guys on the podcast. I want to get a lot more guests on the podcast. Just talk about different things. It doesn't necessarily have to be video games and things like that. But just talk about necessarily probably like politics and things that interest them. Because a lot of people have interesting stories out there. And it's very good to hear from different people with different outlooks of life. So I want to do more of that this year for the podcast. I want to definitely get on my boy Six Wheels again, you know, talk to him and see how things are going with him. I also want to get on, well, a lot more people I want to get on. I can't even think of everybody I want to get on, but you know who you are. Well, I'm Delvin Cox. This is the Mic Drop Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at the Mic Drop Pod. Listen to us on iTunes and subscribe. We really appreciate you guys subscribing to the podcast. And we thank you very much for listening. Also, follow me on Twitter at Delvin_Cox. Follow Vision at I Am Vision on Twitter. And I can't remember his Groove City Entertainment site. By the way, if you get a chance, try to look up his music, man. He is very, very talented. This music is very dope. When you get a chance, check out some of I Am Vision's music. I'll probably, the beginning song of the podcast is one of his songs. We're going to be getting a new song, a new intro for the podcast, probably the next week or the week after next. So look, be on the lookout for that. And overall, guys, thank you guys for listening. Mic Drop Pod, and we are out. Peace.
Now extended through January 14th, join a clean and spacious Planet Fitness for zero enrollment and only $10 a month. With tons of equipment and free fitness training, it's the perfect place for everybody to work out.
Even me, mister, I'm so stressed I grind my teeth more than most people grind coffee.
Especially you. Give your anxiety clenched jaw a rest.
My molars will be so happy.
Start feeling fit-tacular today. Join InClub or at planetfitness.com. Zero enrollment, $10 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends January 14th, see Club for details.
Progressive presents Forest Metaphors,
about bundling your home and auto.
In sports, three goals is a hat trick. And when you bundle your home and auto with Progressive, you get a hat trick of great savings and round-the-clock protection. So you might be thinking, wait, that's two things. A hat trick is three. But in this metaphor, great savings counts as two goals, and so does round-the-clock protection. So it's like four goals, and that's more than three. It's basic math.
Forest Metaphors, presented by Progressive. Bundle and protect today.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Discount not available in all states or situations.